again, and welcome to episode 3 of On My Sofa with My Pussy with me, Mitch Johnson.
And me, Trish Bertram.
Hello, Trish.
Hello, Mitch. I'm here, and she is sitting next to me. My pussy is sitting next to me.
So yes, take some photos. We've been contacted by podcasttoday.co.uk, and they want to do an article on us, so take some pictures of your pussy.
Stop now, just stop.
Actually, I must tell you a story. My sister is not very au fait with computers, and I said, we've done a podcast. She said, oh, what's it called? I said, it's called On the Sofa with My Pussy. So she put it into Google, oh God, and suddenly we've all had all these strange objects that confronted her of ladies' parts.
Oh, that's terrible.
And I said, no, Lee, don't Google it. Yeah, it's a podcast. Go to the podcast thing.
People are very funny that I refer to her as my pussy because stop. I know that I'm kind of like loosely related to Mrs. Slocum, but you know, a pussy cat.
Yeah, it's just filthy minds. Not our problem.
Listen, Mitch, I want to ask you, because I'm very excited, because I know we've had at least 2 listeners. Has anyone sent us an email?
2 listeners. Yesterday we had imaginary listeners, and today we've got 2. Actually, we had a fabulous response. We put this show up on Apple Podcasts, and I think something called Buzzsprout yesterday. Very complicated putting podcasts up. It's like filling in a mortgage application. Really complicated. But we had a lovely response. Emails, let's have a look at the computer. The email Ooh. Address, of course, is... I've forgotten it.
What's I've forgotten it. Hang on, I'll look it up.
Oh, no, it's Mitch and Trish. It's Mitch and Trish at Outlook.com.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
it is.
We've had no emails.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Normally
Come
I'm
on.
Inundated with things about penis enlargement, but no, we've had not even a Nigerian prince has deigned to write to us to offer us £1 million. So if you want to get in contact and say hello and give us some feedback and get us to mention you on the podcast, it's Mitch and Trish at Outlook.
At Outlook.com.
At Outlook.com. Well done, Trishy.
Well, I tell you how I see this. I've got this kind of like vibe about what we're doing here, is that imagine it's a bit like going to the pub with 2 mates who won't shut up, and you're not in the mood for talking at all, so you're just sitting there sipping your wine or your beer, and we're both just gabbing away. So that's the way I see it, really.
And what I like learning about you is we had last time the Olympic stories and your voiceover job stories. Have you always done that, Trish? What was like your first job, or what did you out doing?
I started out as a theatre stage management person.
How lovely, how fantastic.
Yeah, I went to drama school and I learned
champagne
to
and flowers all round.
I did stage management and technical theatre at the Central School of Speech and Drama because I was a stage-struck kid. But I did want to work in the theatre, so that's what I did. What about you?
I did a play at the Central School of Speech and Drama. My friend,
did you?
Yeah, Elaine was studying there, and she had to put on a Harold Pinter play, and she got me and our other friend Pablo to be the 2 stars. And we did it. I think there was a really crucial moment in it where he had to hand me his wallet, and he'd forgot to bring it on stage. And
oh, no.
I don't think we froze. I think we busked it, but the main point of the scene was completely out the window because we forgot the essential prop. But we got away with it. We busted our way through.
But that's the great thing about theatre, is that every time you see a production, you don't know whether it's going to be all fine. And the art is in the discreet concealment of the art, because stuff does go wrong. It
yes.
really goes wrong.
As an audience member, you sometimes feel tense for the cast. You want them to get it right, and you don't want them to get it wrong, and you're on their side. Yeah.
So anyway, so I did that course. So I applied to the National Theatre because I believe in aiming high. And I was so naive back in the day that I actually think sometimes the confidence of your naivety gets you where you want to be. So I rock up at the National Theatre and I ask for a job backstage, and they're so amazed that I had the cheek to do it straight out of drama school that they gave me one. So
good.
I worked. Excellent. I know. Yeah. So I worked backstage and I had a wonderful time. Worked on lots and lots and lots of posh plays and shows with lots and lots of upper crust people. Mm. And it was great. It was absolutely great.
Did you meet lots of stars at the National Theatre?
I did, but no one took any notice of me because I really was just like this little stagehand that was running around and handing people props in the wings and cups of tea. I made tea for an awful lot of famous people, none of whom will ever remember me in their lives, but and most of whom are dead now, so... Which just goes to show, never accept a cup of tea from Trish, okay?
Who's the biggest star you met?
Oh, gosh. There was a day where a mate of mine was working behind the bar, front of house, and she called backstage to me and she said, Dustin Hoffman's coming in to see a play tonight. And I thought, oh, I want to go and see what he looks like up, you know, up close. I have terrible groupie mentality.
No, I've done that. I've done that with a Hollywood star. I'll tell you in a second. Yeah, go on, carry on.
So she says to me, if you come round in the interval, she says, we've got his bucket of champagne sitting on the bar ready for him to pick up for his little group of friends. And I said, oh, she'd come and lounge against the bar in a kind of nonchalant manner, and you'll see him close up. Yeah. So I said, all right then. And I'm lounging against the bar, and along he comes. Ooh. Now, I'm only 5'5", and I swear he was shorter than me.
Oh, wow.
So he comes ambling over, and I thought, I've got to talk to him. I've got to say something. I've got to say I've talked to Dustin Hoffman. So I say to him, excuse me, Mr. Hoffman. I said, are you enjoying the play? And he said, I think the Cherry Orchard is a really unique experience.
Good impression.
And I thought, oh.
Pretentious twit.
You sound really kind of pretentious.
Yes,
I just wanted him to say, yeah, it's great, thank you.
Bugger off, Dusty, you boring old fart.
Anyway, so you know what they say, Mitch? The point of that story is you should never meet your heroes.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, yeah. Great impression, by the way. While you were hanging out with showbiz royalty and Hollywood stars, I was working in Curry's in Enfield behind the counter with Spots going, hello, can I help you?
And, did famous people go into your curries?
No, it's just oiks who wanted to buy VHS machines. But it was quite an adventure. It was my first ever job. And the assistant manager was a son, Vince, was a son of a mafia family from Italy. And he was the most crooked person you've ever met. And I thought this was normal. I didn't really know how you worked in retail. And we ended up, he nicked most of the stock. And I think he gave me £20 to run it to his warehouse in my Mini.
Oh, don't admit that.
Yeah, I thought it was normal. I thought I didn't understand that we were doing bad things. And he used to bring in loads of forged £20 notes. Here, Mitch, would you like to buy some forged 20 mil notes? They're £10 each. And I went, no, it's all right. I don't really want any, thanks, Vince. At the end of the day, the manager came up to me and said, Mitch, have you sold anything for cash today? I went, no. And he said, well, it's very strange because we've got £5,000 worth of forged 20 pound notes in the till. Well, oh, fucking, it's
out. Oh, no. What happened?
Well, the thing is, we did a stock check at the end of the year. And there was something like 50 grand's worth of stock missing. And I knew exactly where it had gone. But they blamed the manager. They fired the manager.
No.
But the manager was even naughtier, because what the manager was doing, it was the days when VHSs were just being invented. And we had a load of VHS machines in a row on the shelves of Curry's and Enfield. And naughty manager would get one of those blue films from Scandinavia and he'd make 20 copies of it on the shop machines.
No!
Yes! They would have all these videotapes in the shop of these mucky movies that he'd been copying and selling with all the Curry's equipment, and then half of them were under the counter. And I had a really embarrassing thing happen to me when I was 17 and all awkward and geeky.
Yeah.
This couple came in, and a lovely young couple with a little child, and they said, hello, we'd like to buy a video recorder, please. And I went, okay, I'll show you this one. And I reached under the counter just to find a tape. Any tape will do, just to show them how these things work, because it's like they were new at this time, late 70s. And so I put this bloody tape in and press play, and what burst on the screen? Oh, God, copulation and naked bodies and all sorts of things.
Oh, no. Did they buy it?
I tried to make light of the situation by going, yeah, of course, what's he got it? She was really shocked and really disgusted. And the thing that I remember in my brain is it was one of these big tellies with a remote control with about 100 buttons on it. And I couldn't for the life of me find the off button. So
no.
This thing was playing and they like marched out of the shop. And I went, oh, sorry.
Listen, I've been at the real telly when they've actually managed to cut pornography to air. In transmission, so
have
I mean, you know, we've all been there.
Yeah. There was a thing on Jazz FM. I think some guy on Jazz FM did a very famous case in the radio industry. He was doing an overnight show and got a bit bored and put a mucky film on the internet, but he left the fader up. It was going to air.
Oh, no.
So for about the next 3 hours, aficionados of Jazz FM are looking to hear the latest jazz up. Had a, yeah, give it to me, baby.
Do you know, that's ringing a bell with me.
Yeah, it's quite a famous story. It was on for about 2 hours before anyone noticed, which was
funny. Listen, what I want to know is, so the jump from Curry's, from this very dodgy life you had.
Oh, God.
You had
we should have
Curry's.
All been in prison.
Yeah. How did you, what happened next? Where did you go after that?
Okay, if you're interested, I set up a pirate radio station called Radio Shoestring. We did it in a little carpet warehouse we used as our studio. And the people we used, and we knew when I was about 17, have all gone on to do good things. There was Paul McKenna was helping us do it. Gary King sung the jingles. Our friend Piers Easton, who's now head of transmitters for everybody in the world, he built us a microwave link up to a tower block. He had the keys, forged keys to a council tower block. And we transmitted a show called Radio Shoestring, and we did really well. Got a big audience until the studio burnt down mysteriously one day. I wonder why.
What is it with you? What is it?
No, it's always a disaster waiting to happen, yeah.
You don't think it was arson? Was it arson or just someone asking about.
I don't know what happened. Maybe the equipment fused or something, but we caused a major fire in Walthamstow and the whole carpet warehouse burned down.
Yeah. So your pirate radio station is a pile of ashes. Yeah. And like a phoenix, Mitch, did you rise from those ashes?
No, I went to be a T-boy. I got fed up with doing everything, running the station, building the studio, trying to get advertisers. I thought, I just want an easy life. And I found a job as a T-boy in a studio in Soho, which made all the TV adverts, called John Wood Studios, if you're interested. Mm. And they were legendary in the 80s and 90s. They made all the posh TV adverts, all the British Airways stuff, all the Philips stuff, had all the superstars in, well, not superstars, the actors in doing the voice. And I was the T-boy. And aww. I used to have to go in the studios, go, hello, do you want a cup of tea? And actually, on my first day, this is interesting, there was lots of stars in there I got to know, which was lovely. But on my first day, they said, go in the studio, Mitch, and ask everyone what cup of tea. I went, all right then, okay. So I went into the voice booth, and there's this bloke doing the commentary, and I went, hello, mate, do you want a cup of tea? And he said, oh, yes, I'll have a cup of tea with two sugars, please, lovely. And I went and made him a cup of tea, and I came back, hello, mate, here's your cup of tea. And he said, thank you. And the boss took me aside and said, Mitchell, I know it's your first day, but... that's Prince Andrew.
Oh, Mitch, topical.
Yeah, try not to call him mate. Sorry, all right, bye. On the circle with my pussy. So, really nice reaction. We put this podcast up on Apple and Buzzsprout the other day. And you know what, Trish? We've had a lovely reaction, really positive. Lots of nice people on Twitter and Facebook.
Nice.
And
that's
I had Steve Collins from podcasttoday.co.uk wants to do an interview with us. So,
blimey.
Put your best frock on, get Marley groomed, and we'll do that. That'll be good, won't it? Podcasttoday.co.uk.
Oh, thank you, Steve. That's very, very nice. I like that. We've also had a bit of reaction to, you remember we were talking about those cheap adverts that we get to
do? Oh, yes. You mentioned last time that you pay £50, is it?
That's right, for 10 seconds of airtime on Channel 4 in the days when Channel 4 was new.
Okay.
And we've had this great idea from one of our listeners, Marianne, and she said, why don't you two make cheap adverts?
My God, what a great idea! £50 a go. We'll say anything. We'll sell anything.
Yes,
yes.
Whatever you want. We can do a happy birthday.
Oh, my God, you've got me inspired now. We could sell contraband, like...
whatever you want, you know, just
drugs.
Ask us.
Like the dark web. Yay!
No. We'll get into trouble, Mitchie. But you are a dab hand on the old Joanna, are you not?
No, I'm not really good. We could sing them jingle. So for £50, we could do an advert for your sausage shop, or
yes.
we could do a request.
Yes.
You know, you want to say hello to your girlfriend or boyfriend.
We could do your voicemail. We could do something filthy on your voicemail.
Let's have a go. So, hang on, let's just see if I can have a go here. Here we go. Okay, here we go. If you want to say hello to your friends, give
hello.
£50 to Mitch and Trishy.
Mitch and Trish.
How's that? Is that okay?
Ooh, yes. I quite like that.
Oh, hello, we're in reverb. Reverb! Right, get rid of that. So, £50 a go, let's do it. Just email us at mitchandtrish@outlook.com and we'll
anything
do anything.
Reasonable.
Eh?
Anything reasonable and not criminal.
No, I think the more unreasonable, the better. I think that's funny. If you want us to, you know, sell forged £20 notes or supply... Well, I won't go into that because we might actually be taken
seriously. I think our listener, Marianne, needs to be our head of marketing and PR because it's genius. Genius idea. Thank you, Marianne.
We're going to be rich.
Oh, I know what I was going to tell you. There is an app that you can get and it's called Meow Talk.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what I have to do is I chase Marley around and...
I think you need to get a wife or a boyfriend.
All I need is my pussy.
Yeah.
I chase her around and I have to point my phone at her. And then when she yells at me, which she does quite often, it translates what she's saying. And I cannot even begin to tell you what she's saying. It's disgusting. It's
no, absolutely I think disgusting. I'm changing my mind about you. I think you've turned into a mad cat woman.
No. I was always a mad cat woman. Even as a little girl, I was a mad cat woman.
I had a mad woman knock on my door yesterday. I was throwing things out. We know talking about and hauling and chucking out stuff. So they have a lovely tradition in Brighton where they just leave stuff on the streets. For you to pick up. My friend Jed picked up a pair of lovely old speakers the other day and he told me it's a tradition that comes from Japan. In Japan, they leave stuff on the street and they do different things every day. So Monday might be clothes, Tuesday might be hi-fi equipment, Wednesday might be, you know, furniture. So I left this old IKEA chair, that's a quite nice IKEA chair actually, on the front drive and said, look, free chair, help yourself.
I like
expecting someone just to pick it up and take it. Then last night I got a knock on the door. hello. And this absolutely bonkers woman said, you. She thought I was some kind of shopkeeper or some kind of servant. I went, oh, hello. She went, yes, now you, this chair over here, I need it loading in my car. I went, well, I've only got my socks on. Yeah, exactly, what? I was so stunned, I walked down the freezing cold and rain in my shirt only and my socks and said, well, yes, I want this chair, but I need it loading in the car and there's some boxes in the car, can you take them out? So I was so stunned at the fact she didn't even say hello or how are you or may I have the chair that I'm standing there in the rain unloading her car of all these boxes and an old Hoover she had in there. And she's giving me this blinking 5-minute long story about her dad and his broken chair.
What is it?
In the rain. This oversharing thing that people have.
What is it? What is it with people? Yeah. I actually think the world's gone mad. Oh, the world's gone mad.
Well, I was thinking, well, can you go now? I didn't say anything. I was going, oh, yes, very interesting. Yes, I'm freezing cold, throat soaking wet. And then she said, have you got anything else? I'm like, well, I'm not shocked. Go to bloody IKEA. And I went, no.
Madam, you're mistaking me for Currys.
I think she was.
Or IKEA.
Yeah.
Listen, I had a similar one. I must just tell you mine. I was trying to sell an old telly. So I put it on Facebook Marketplace. And a local chap got in touch. And he wanted me to put it in an Uber, pay for the Uber. Because he kept saying, I can't come and get it. My mate's going to come round in a car. And he messed me around for a week and a half.
Oh, there are so many stupid idiots on Facebook.
And I'm messaging saying, do you want it? Because I've got other people interested. So in the end, he said, oh, my mate can't come and get it now. Can you deliver? And I said, no, I'm not delivering.
No, I get that. You know? I had a woman buy a wardrobe from me when I lived in Belsize Park. Great big bloody wardrobe. And she turned up in a mini. And I said, you won't get a wardrobe in a mini. And she said, well, can we try? I went, no, because it won't fit. There's no point taking it onto the bloody street and seeing. I'm just telling you, it won't fit. And then she said, oh, can we get a taxi? And I thought, oh, for God's sake, a taxi is not going to take a wardrobe in the back.
Did she think her mini was the TARDIS or something?
Yeah, people are quite stupid, actually, aren't they?
My bloke, let me finish off what I was saying about him. So when he got really arsy with me because I wouldn't deliver this blooming telly, and he really wanted it. And so he said to me, would I pay for the Uber?
Yeah.
Put it in, and when he received it, he would then drop the money round at a later date. And I thought, does he think I was born yesterday? Anyway, so I basically curtly said, no, that's it, you know. And then he sent me the most abusive message saying, people like me didn't understand, and he had this terrible life, and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, oh, for goodness sake, you know.
You're very wise that what they do is they overshare. That all you want to do is do the transaction, sell the thing or buy the thing and be done with it. And
but
people
give
their life story.
Before we go into are we oversharing right now? That's what we need to ask us.
We're like the typical Facebook Marketplace buyer. We're oversharing our boring lives.
We are oversharing, and do we need likes and things? No, we were going to have net curtain twitches, weren't we? Do we want likes?
No, we don't care.
Do we care?
No.
Does it actually matter? Because they're not real likes, are they?
I was talking to my sister today. She's very worried. She's got a 16-year-old daughter, and she's saying, you know, they're really into their Instagram now, and all her friends, all the 16-year-old girls' friends, are buying these posh cocktail-type dresses and learning dance routines and sticking them on TikTok. My sister was a bit shocked because they all look like porn stars at 16. And then desperate for likes. And I just find that a bit odd. Because me and you, and I was talking to our friend Darren today, we all agreed that we're okay because we've had 30 years on the planet without this. Mm. And the new generation, it's all they know.
Exactly.
And it isn't a real affirmation of love or of friendship when someone, you're sitting there desperate for likes from strangers in cyberspace. And I'm a bit worried that the dopamine rush that produces is an unhealthy way of getting affirmation and getting love and getting connection
with
people.
Well, yeah, I watched a documentary on Netflix, I think it was, and they were saying that Facebook and Instagram and Twitter basically are programmed in the same way they program Vegas slot machines. So with a Vegas slot machine, you put some money in and you get a little tinkle, you get a little bit of it back, and then you might get another little bit, and then nothing happens, and then suddenly they give you maybe almost a big win, but not quite.
Yes,
but
the same principle
is used to actually construct the algorithms of all these social media things. So the likes become that dopamine rush you get if you were gambling. I mean, it's extraordinary.
And the same colour come up in red. It's like a little affirmation and stuff like that. That you're popping. And dopamine's fascinating. Dopamine is your learning neurotransmitter. Did you know that? It's how the brain learns to do things that will make it survive. When you were a caveman in the olden days, if you found, say, some water or maybe a plant growing and you ate it or drank the water, you would get a dopamine release which tells the subconscious brain to repeat that activity, and it's a learning drug. So to get a dopamine rush, you get a dopamine rush when you do something that makes you survive. If you have a piece of chocolate, for example, your dopamine level will go up by about 30%. If you have sex, it will go up by about 100%. Here's what's interesting for nicotine addicts. If you have nicotine, it goes up by 130% more than sex, which is very interesting. Why people can't stop smoking. Me.
But yeah, this is also why I'm single and addicted to my vaping machine.
You have your pussy to play with, it's fine.
Oh, shush.
The other thing about dopamine, if you have something like crystal meth or cocaine, it goes up by 1,000%, which is why these things are so, so addictive. But the reason I'm telling you this is every time you get a little reward, and you know your brain is used to a reward from eating, having sex, finding a comfort or fire or things, and so your brain relies on the dopamine to survive. But things like Facebook likes and gambling wins and shopping, drinking booze, also give you a dopamine rush. And that's why people get addicted to it, because they want the dopamine rush.
It's fascinating that it's all been harnessed to drive social media as well.
Well, there's a good new book out called Dopamine Overload, where the authoress explains what we know, which is in the olden days, you would only get one or two dopamine buzzes a day. You know, say in the olden days when you were a caveman or whatever, and you fired a bow and arrow and caught a wild boar, you get a dopamine rush. But now you get a dopamine rush every 30 seconds, and it's addictive.
Wow.
So as you're walking down the street and you see a McDonald's, oh, dopamine rush. Get a like on Facebook, oh, dopamine rush. And it's unnatural that you're getting so many dopamine rushes per day from modern society, which is why Dr. Mitch thinks people are getting all stressed out, lots of mental health problems and lots of stress going on in the world, because we're not balancing it. We're always wanting the next sensation, the next treat, the next reward.
So if you just stayed in bed all day and just snoozed and didn't do anything else and you didn't get any rushes at all...
I think I'd be all right. That's what I do. It's like my daily day.
That's what we do, isn't
it? My daily life. But I do know when I'm getting a dopamine rush. I was going a bit bonkers on Amazon recently and buying stuff for the studio.
Oh, shopping here.
Oh, you can just feel
rush.
That dopamine rush when you press the buy button. Yes.
Oh, well, listen here. You're talking to somebody who's been to Vegas lots and lots
of
times.
Oh, yes, of course you have.
I find that whole gambling thing quite fascinating. I know some people are kind of like saying, oh, gambling, I don't get it at all. But that's probably
it's whatever you're addicted to, you see. Addictions are kind of a result of traumas, as Dr. Gabor Naté says.
Oh, really?
Yes. And it's your brain's way of dealing with something that's upset you. So it's actually an addiction is a solution to a problem that the brain can't quite handle, as opposed to a problem. And if I could go deeper, if you don't want me to bore you, putting people in prison and stuff for having an addiction is probably the worst thing you can do.
Because do they that? I suppose they do.
Well, they do. Anyone who smokes cannabis in America or takes drugs or, you know, they stick them in prison. That's kind of the worst thing. The addiction is the brain crying out for a bit of therapy and a bit of help about some trauma. Dr. Gabor Maté, if you're ever bored, have a look at YouTube, Google him, and he explains it really well.
Oh, I will.
And your addiction can be anything. Everyone thinks addiction is... coke heads or boozers or sex addicts, but it's everything. Like, it can be power. Donald Trump's addicted to power. It could be shopping, it could be gambling, it could be cocaine, it could be anything. And when you say people don't get the gambling thing, it's because their dopamine's not being fired. You know, me and you can do a million things and not be bothered. But some person will do addiction, and that will fire off their dopamine receptors in a massive way, and that's when they get addicted to it. Whereas me and you can take it or leave it.
Mine is certainly my weakness is nicotine, but I also would say that if I hadn't ever been a smoker, I probably would have had a voice right up here and not had my career. So,
yes, I can do an impression of you. Let me just put my pitch changer on. So if I go down like that, I can be Trish Bertram. Say hello, how are you? My name's Trish Bertram. And then go very hard like that and be hello.
No.
In fact, actually, a little point about that. When they disguise voices on the telly and they do that pitch change, they bring it down, it's actually really easy to just pitch change it back up and find out who the criminal is, okay? So if you'll recognise it. Imagine you're watching a TV show and they have a villain. They say, we've disguised this man's voice so no one can recognise him. And he will then go...
Yeah, well, you see, we had the drugs, or we took it, or we shot this bloke, or we threw his body in a river. And if I get found out who I am, I'll be dead. So all you do
is you take that recording and you pitch change it back up by the same amount, and you get the same voice, you see?
And then you find out it's Mitch Johnson voicing it.
So all those, all those criminals who disguise their voice, it's easy to find out who the real voice is, and then kneecap them.
That's very funny. But no, listen, I definitely think that smoking probably made my voice a lot deeper.
Yeah.
And I'll just tell you a funny little story. And this is something I've done all my life. Because I've got a deep voice for a girly, yeah. I get random calls about, you know, maybe someone from the bank ringing up or somebody ringing up about some bit of bureaucratic nonsense. And they'd always automatically assume they were talking to a bloke. So I would play along.
And all right, mate, see the match.
And right towards the end, when they would say, OK, sir, could we have your name and address? And I'd go, yes, it's Miss Patricia Bertram. And you would hear, there would be this momentary silence.
Yeah.
I could feel the embarrassment coming over the phone in waves. And I would be amusing myself like hell. I would be like laughing inwardly. And I've quite enjoyed that because men talk to men differently to how they talk to women. I'm absolutely, and I think women talk to women differently.
I don't think they do, love. Can you make us a cup of tea? And did you know that patronising means talking down to people?
Leave it out, Mitch. You've seen Arsenal play this weekend.
Yeah, seen the match. Fucking hell, look at the tits on that. On the server
with my pussy. So I've been watching this programme about Anna Sorokin, Anna Delvey. Have you come across her?
That's far too intellectual for me.
No, it's not. She was a con woman who managed to inveigle her way into New York society by pretending to be terribly rich and terribly, you know, important and famous. And she wasn't. She was just this. She was this Russian pretending to be a German who pitched up in New York and managed to sort of woo up across society. And it got me thinking that actually, it's how we take people on face value, because all she had to do was tell people this is who she was.
Yes.
She got people to, you know, the banks to loan her money, and she had all this money that she was getting off other people, so she dressed herself accordingly and always wore the best designer clothes. But if you say to someone, actually, I'm a neurophysicist, they've got no reason to disbelieve you, really.
I've always said people believe what you tell them. Darren Brown's very good at that. He will show someone in a uniform and people just go for it. If you want to nick something, by the way, just wear a high-vis jacket and carry a ladder and they let you in anywhere. One of Darren Brown's best ones was he stood outside a bank, or he got a security guard to stand outside a bank where there's that hole in the wall thing where you put the day's takings in, you know, the kind of security drawer, and you put like the £5,000 you've taken in the day. And he just put a sign up saying, drawer not working, please hand money to security guard. And everyone, to a man, took the day's takings and says, oh, not working, I'll give it to you. And the security guard, just people believe what you tell them. If you see a security guard, you'll believe it is one. If you see a man in a white coat, you'll believe it's a doctor. Mm. If you see someone with a high-vis jacket and a ladder. It's always a ladder. You can get anywhere with a ladder. I used to do it in Teleland when we worked at the BBC. Mm. They used to have a thing called closed sets where you couldn't go on the set because it was some terribly famous pop star like Madonna or something, and she didn't want anyone in the studio, so everyone was locked out. But if you have a headset and a clipboard, you can get anywhere in telly. You just walk up to the security guard with your headset and your clipboard, say, very important, I just got to give this to the director, and they let you in.
One of my best ones, actually, and I have done that, when I was an impoverished drama student with two mates, and we had a friend who was working front of house in one of the theatres in the West End. And he told us one day that in one of the kind of posh areas, conference room areas of this theatre, there was going to be a corporate lunch, and that not all the tables were filled. And if we rocked up, we could have one of these tables. Now, you know, when you're a student, you don't eat much, really. And so this was for an ice cream company. And it was the ice cream salesman of the year lunch.
Okay.
So
what a glamorous event, yeah.
So me and my two mates, we went and sat at one of the tables. And we actually had the lunch while our friend was partly doing the serving and stuff. So when we turned up, he went, go and sit on that one over there.
We did
have the lunch, and the managing director came round, and the CEO came round, and he said, and your sales figures are very, very good this year. Well, thank you, sir. And I promise you, it is a true story.
You can actually get in.
I've seen you do it. You walk in backwards with a glass of wine.
I've done that. Take your own glass of wine to the Grosvenor House, walking backwards and say, thank you for coming, blah, 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 to imaginary people, and the security guard lets you back in. You think you've just come out. Do you know what? Actually, no, I worked at the Grosvenor House a lot. I did a lot of voiceovers for Voice of God for award ceremonies, and you've done that too.
I've done that too.
I know the way around. I know how you get downstairs and into the kitchens, around the back. And if you ever want a dinner and you haven't got any money, just put a dinner suit on and walk in the Grosvenor House. Because 5 nights out of 7, there's some awards ceremony going on.
I know.
And just sit down at a table and eat the dinner and just nod politely.
Right, you're on. Yeah. You know what? We're going to do that. We are going to do that because I quite fancy a posh night out.
Yeah,
and times
right.
are hard.
I'll put on a suit. You put on your posh frock and we'll go to the Grosvenor House. I guarantee we'll get in and that'll be just hilarious. And we've got to make small talk to our fellow diners about whatever awards it is.
Yeah. I have done, actually, I've just remembered, I've done another one. I've done a similar one, but not as much brazen front as the Grosvenor House sit down, you know, lunch, but dinner. But I was walking past one day a hotel in the West End, and this is only about 3-4 years ago, with a friend. And she and I were walking past, and we noticed looking in the windows that there seemed to be a sort of stand up canapes, free drinks thing going on. And so we wandered into reception and we just kind of wandered over to where it was all going on. And it was a doctor's thing. It was a medical thing. It was either the General Medical Council or something. It was a meet and greet. So we just kind of mingled and took a glass of wine.
If you can get away with it and you're on the front.
This is what we're going to do, Mitch. We're going to blag our way in somewhere and then we're going to report back.
Yeah. I once did it with a load of listeners from Virgin Radio. I did a contest where you won a dinner out of this restaurant, a pub venue, and there's about 10 of us, and I had to host it, and it was very boring. And we were sitting in this boring dinner. And next door in the big hall was a wedding going on. I thought, come on, let's crash the wedding because it'd be more fun. And so I was there with 10 strange listeners that I didn't really know. I mean, they turned out to be all right. I said, come on, just so you're at the wedding, so you know the groom or so. So we went into this wedding and we sat down at a table. And this bloke in a black jacket came up and said, hello. I said, waiter, can we have 1, 2, 3, 4? Can we have 10 pints of lager and a bottle of wine, please? And he very funnily said in the calmest, coolest voice, there are two reasons why I'm not going to serve you. First of all, I'm not a waiter. Second, I've never seen you before. And thirdly, I'm the groom.
Oh, no.
Funerals are good as well. If you want to eat food for free, funeral.
Stop.
Just going back to the Grosvenor House, like you, I've done lots of voiceovers and awards ceremonies. You know, when you have to be the voice of God and you stand at the back and you go, and now, please, the award for the best ice cream of the year goes to... And then the thing is, they all get really drunk and they don't care towards the end. But the best one was the medical one. I did the medical awards. And there were all these long names of products that you just couldn't pronounce, so I blurred my way through them. And explain what they were for. But as everyone got more drunk towards the end, they were going to announce the product of the year, okay? Yeah. And so imagine a load of rowdy doctors and medical people all getting really drunk and waiting which company did the product of the year, and they're all cheering and shouting, and it was up to me to announce the finalists, okay? But the thing is, they were all about things that cure diseases, so no word of a lie. I said, and the nominations for the product of the year are blah, 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 thermoplaxin for cancer. And all these people went, yay, cancer! And I said, and number two is doxymoxoroxin, which cures AIDS. And they went, AIDS, yay! And I just thought, that's the most bizarre thing. They're actually cheering diseases. And when I announce the winner.
I love the fact you're shouting out random diseases to wild applause.
And the runner-up is heart disease. Yeah, heart disease. I'll tell you what, Trish, the best blag I ever did was at your party at LWT. Do you remember I got into the party that no one could get into unless
absolutely.
They had an invite? And just to set the scene, it was the closing down of the LWT studios. And over the years, maybe 10,000 people have worked there, but they only invited like 1,000 select people. Now, you were one of them.
I was. I had a wristband and everything.
And everyone in the pub said, you'll never get in there. Security is really tight and you won't get in.
That's
said,
right, because you and I met beforehand. We both met and we were having a drink. You said, I'm coming with you. I said, well, let's see.
And here's how I did it. It was just fluke. I was with our friend Simon Withington, who's a great producer on Channel 5, does all those When TV Goes Horribly Wrong shows. Simon's lovely. And I said, you know anyone who's been invited who can't come? And he said, no, we don't. So when I got to the front of the queue, there were two women with iPads who were taking names. And one of them, at the same time, Simon Withington was having his name taken on one iPad, and the other woman on the other iPad was asking my name. And I said, I couldn't think what to say, so I said, my name's Simon. Then I couldn't remember his second name. I couldn't remember if it was Worthington, Withington, Witherspoon. So I'm standing there in this massive queue going, my name's Simon, woo, 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 woo. And she thought that I had some speech defects and a stutter. And I'm going, whoa. And she, oh, poor bloke. And she looked at her list, Simon Dublin. Oh, you must be Simon Withington. I went,
yes. You said yes.
Yes. And she said, here you go.
And I turned around and there you were behind me and I could not believe it. My jaw dropped open and we hung out together all night, didn't we? We had a right laugh. Yeah. But that was the party to end all parties.
And who was that bloke I went up to who was the head of everything and just said, hello, mate? And you couldn't believe that I'd gone up and made friends with him.
Wasn't it Greg Dyke?
Yes, it was Greg Dyke, yes.
who went on to be head of the BBC.
Yes, no, but I always know that people don't know that they don't know you. Now, I had actually met Greg Dyke once or twice before, but very vaguely. And everyone's too polite to say, I'm sorry, I don't know who you are. So if you march up, they go, Greg, great to see you, mate. How's it going? How's the BBC? Lovely to see you. We must catch up again soon. They're too polite to say, I'm sorry, I've no idea who you are. So they go along with it. And they go, yeah, it's good to see you too. How have you been? They say, very, very well. Yes, we need to open the studio together one day, Greg. As I'm knocking this one down, I said, wait, I need to get in touch with the other local
arranger.
He said, yes, well, give me a call, my office. And I thought, he's got no idea who I am, but he's just going along with it.
but you're brilliant at that, Mitchie. I mean, I've been places with you, and you literally bowl up to anybody and just introduce yourself and have a chat. And yeah. I think that's a gift. It's a gift, because most people are too nervous to do it. But you've got this incredible kind of front. Where does that come from?
Do you remember when we were in the pub talking to Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin?
Yes! Please tell that story for our listener.
I didn't want to talk about, oh my God, you're Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin. So we talked about dogs. My dog, Alfie, just went up and was sniffing around. And he went, oh, it's a nice dog. I went, yeah, that's Alfie. All right, Rob. And he goes, yeah, I've got a dog and my dog's great. And he's called Fred. And I told him, my dog is, he wheezes and he's like me in my Land Rover. I went, yeah, I know, having a Land Rover, well. And we talked about dogs for about half an hour and I'm calling him Rob. All right, Rob, yeah, he's all right. What's your name? I'm Mitch, yeah. And we're the best of friends. And we didn't mention music or pop stars once. And I think that's what he liked.
But I remember also, can I just say, I mean, you know, you go to the pub and you go to me, oh, look, it's Robert Plant over there. Next thing I know, you're over there having a chat with him.
Yeah, but don't do the wanky fan thing. If you do the wanky fan thing and want to say, can I have a selfie? You know, you just look like you put yourself down as a twit.
I think that's my failing.
To a normal person. Yeah,
I know, but that's my failing. I think Dustin Hoffman wasn't impressed with me.
I'm surprised you didn't end up in bed with Dustin Hoffman that night.
How could you accuse me of being such a hussy and a scarlet woman?
Well, Dustin Hoffman, you know, notch on the bedpost. That's a story for a dinner party.
Well, that's hilarious. But listen, there's another one I remember. There's another one. It's when we were in the pub yet again. This is in Camden, back in our old stamping ground. And we were trying to remember the name of an album and a band. And sitting across from us, who were getting increasingly irritated because we couldn't remember, and suddenly shouted out the name at us. Do you remember who that was?
It was Robert Elms from BBC London.
And
he got so cross because we were going, now who recorded that album? Was it Oasis? Was it Pulp? Was it he was recrossed because he's a muso. He said, I think you'll find that it was recorded by the Smiths. And we go, oh, sorry, okay.
Sorry, Robert.
Sorry, we didn't know our music albums.
I just remember he was rustling his newspaper really irritatedly.
Yeah, so. Getting really cross that we didn't know who recorded what song.
I think you'll find it was
the Smiths on their 1983 album, The Queen Is Dead. Sorry, Robert. Sorry we got it wrong in the pub.
Honestly, Mitch, this is the thing. I want to go everywhere with you because wherever we go, you are going to be
comedy in shoes.
Yeah. I know.
Anyway, on that note, are you around for another one soon?
Oh, I think so.
All right, well, don't forget you can get in touch at mitchandtrish@outlook.com and get us on Twitter, get us on Facebook. We're all over the place. And it's been a pleasure. Bye, Trishy.
Bye, Mitchie.
Bye, Marley the cat.